Grant Duff, Douglas Ainslie, Part 3, continued from the January-February issue. Grant Duff stayed in South India at least 2 years, part of which he spent visiting Ceylon, retired from government service and born into a family embedded into the upper echelon of the British Empire. He could comfortably travel and reside in the most luxurious British guest houses available. Soon after he arrived in the ashram, his intense sincerity conferred upon him such an exalted experience in the presence of the master that he was most grateful for the simple, humble accommodation offered him there. Never had the ashram seen the likes of a devotee from this stratum of British society who was well versed in literature and philosophy. In 1935, the same year, Grant Duff first made his appearance in Sri Ramanashramam. Two important English translations of the Maharishi's works were published, Five Hymns to Arunachala and Truth Revealed, Sad Vidya. Taking advantage of Grant Duff's literary skills, the ashram felt no hesitation in requesting him to write the preface for both these publications. Duff was a student of philosophy, had been a teacher of Hegel, and was the first to translate the Italian philosopher Benedetto Croce's works into English. He had a clear understanding of present-day philosophies, both East and West, as well as those from past centuries. And now that he had glimpsed the ultimate truth in the Maharishi's presence, he seems to have lost all patience and respect for these thinkers of his time. In his preface to the Five Hymns, he first comes down hard on all the contemporary philosophers, summarily dismissing them for their intellectual foibles, which may be clever, but lead nowhere. On this subject, he starts his introduction to the Five Hymns to Arunachala. The Five Hymns to Arunachala, first edition, 1935. Preface. My definition of the philosophic quest may not be acceptable in the East, or, for that matter, in the West. It is contained in 6 words. Technique of the approach to God. That is also a Greek saying, which I translate thus. Going by many paths, they reach the same end. Both in the East and West, a great deal of time is wasted in clever dialectic that does not lead anywhere but to the enhancement of philosophical pride. With that, couple the use of algebraic formulae in philosophy and the absurd new logic of Professor Moore and what is called the Cambridge School. On the other side, in the West, we have the Hegelians who, at any rate, dispense with mathematical proofs, and thanks to Hegel having carefully read many Hindu religious works before writing his treatises, though his acknowledgement of this is at best perfunctory. There is a good deal of truth in his dull, ponderous, and often obscure writings. Bradley too contains a good deal of truth in his appearance and reality, and he also is deeply indebted to the East, as anyone who knows the Indian sacred books can perceive at once on perusal of the Oxonian professor's writings. Bergson's Vital Urge is a clever assimilation and adaptation of the tantric notion of Shiva Shakti to European tastes. And this very year, one of our leading novelists, my old acquaintance, Edgar Jepson, came to me full of his discovery of Bergson's wonderful idea. Being already acquainted with my friend, Sir John Woodruff's admirable versions of the Tantric teachings, I was able to explain to Edgar Jepson that he had far better turn to English translations of Tantra than be fobbed off by a French philosopher's adaptation of the theme. Soon after that conversation, I came to India, already convinced of the fact that only in India is there any real knowledge of the divine, and by good fortune, chanced to be directed by the excellent Mr. Raphael Hirst, Paul Brunton, to Trivandrum. There, it did not take me long to see that I was in direct contact with one who had passed beyond the boundaries of the senses and was indeed already merged in the absolute of his true self, though manifesting here for our benefit for a few brief years. I may be asked how it was that I received such an impression. I can only reply, as I should, to one who asked me how I saw the sun on looking out of the window, by saying that I did so by the use of my eyes and, incidentally, of all my other senses collaborating. I did not need any algebraic or other proof of the existence of the sun. I do not need any other proof of the divinity of Ramana Maharshi. In these lyrical hymns to the Arunachala hill, he sets forth in burning words what he has himself experienced and constructs so far as is possible, as did the Buddha for other audiences, a raft to enable all of us to cross over and obtain a like contact. But he tells us plainly that in order to reach our true self, which dwells beneath the surface on the right side of the chest, we must first of all discard that self which is the aggregate of sense impressions reflected on the mind. Now, this is not at all an easy thing to do, but I can assure the readers of this divine work that it has been done by others, and that the guidance afforded by this work and by its predecessor, Sat Darshana Bhashya, forms an admirable raft to aid the aspirant in his attempt to make contact with his own real self, God. It is said in the Brahma Siddhi that rites and ceremonies are of use in obtaining divine knowledge because they shorten the time necessary for the approach. Just as a person mounted on a horse will reach his destination sooner than a pedestrian, however fast the latter may oblige himself to walk. I refer back here to my own definition of philosophy in the true sense of the word, and urgently counsel all readers to get into touch as soon as possible with the truth as made clear by Sri Ramana Maharshi. Why wander about for the few years that the most fortunate of us have at our disposal in the morasses of Western philosophy, or in the equally imperfect and marshy swamps of Christian and Islamic religion? Though here too, as elsewhere, there exist long paths to the truth, when you have actually within your grasp the very truth itself. The head of one of the great Indian universities, whom I met this year in Mysore, said to me, "You have been fortunate in your Indian quest, for Ramana Maharshi is the only man that I know of now living and teaching in India who can be compared with the ancient teachers, of whom Shankara is the greatest." I do not give my friend's name, as I have not asked his permission, but it is a name well known, not only in India, but also in Europe, as one of the leaders of philosophic thought. Yet, he made me understand quite clearly that he did not regard himself or any of the other Brahmin teachers of philosophy as in any way comparable to the divine being who still honors the sacred hill of Arunachala with his presence. I am deeply moved and honored by the request thus made to me to write this preface, which is simply an attempt to erect a signpost at the entrance to the garden, which all who think will wish to enter sooner or later. Why not go straight in rather than walk many miles and possibly break your necks by attempting to scale the walls erected by dogma or dialectic? The manor house, Kunur, South India, Grand Duff, the Athenaeum, Pall Mall, London. To be continued.